Welcome to the Nerd Party.
Oh, Miles here.
Outpost for the week is freshly delivered for the last time with the Goblet of Fire as we hit chapter 37, and I am just one of the hosts here, Matthew Rushing, and I am proud to introduce, for the 94th time, Drea Kaufman.
Hello! Hello.
Hello. 94 episodes, wow. And we've reached the end of book four.
That's impressive. I'm impressed with us. Let's be honest here.
And I'm impressed with J.K. Rowling, because when I think of the fact that there are over 100 episodes left for the series, but there are only 3 books left, I'm like, damn, girl, you wrote a lot.
That also means that we have like 2 years left of recordings.
Almost. I mean, yeah. Because I think this ends up being, I think, a 3-year project as we had projected it. And we've done pretty good about staying every week. So that's,
yeah,
you know.
I think we've missed like a week. And, you know, sorry, I had a baby.
Now, I will say,
you
know, the upcoming holidays, especially during the Christmas season, they will probably end up missing a couple weeks because I'm going to be gone. And it's going to be, I'm trying to figure out how I'm going to do the 602 Club when the Aquaman comes out. So. We may miss a couple weeks there because I don't have access to my stuff because I'll be in Dallas. So, but yes, we've done a very good job of keeping up with the podcast, and we want to thank you, everybody, for listening and enjoying the podcast. In fact, Dre, I don't know if you saw this, but we just got a message today over on facebook.com/thenerdparty where we had posted the latest show that, as we're recording this, the show came out today. A woman named Stephanie Kubin had said that she's not up to date with the podcast, but that she started listening and she's loving them. My favorite Harry Potter podcast that I found. Thank you guys for bringing some magic back. And so thank you so much for Stephanie for reaching out to us over there on Facebook. We love it when people let us know that they're liking the show and what they think. And we're just really glad that you ended up finding it. And to say that this is, you know, your favorite Harry podcast means a lot, because I know there are other Harry Potter podcasts out there. And so we really appreciate you listening, and hopefully you'll enjoy it as you make your way through the series with us. You can find us on iTunes, which is a great place to find us, or anywhere you get your podcasts. If you do happen to be on Apple Podcasts or iTunes, give us a star rating review. Let people know what you think of the show so we continue to grow and more people like Stephanie will find us. We're over on Twitter at @JoinNerdParty, where you should be following us. And of course, like I said, on Facebook, facebook.com/thenerdparty, where you can also like us and catch up with us as we post episodes. And you can see all the things that are going on in the Nerd Party, because there's so many different shows happening. And then last but not least, we're over on the web at thenerdparty.com. And if you want to send us an email, you can do that. thenerdparty.com/contact, choose a show, choose Outpost, and that email comes to Drea and I. So, Drea, fortunately enough, or interestingly enough, chapter 37, the end of the Goblet of Fire, is actually called the beginning. And
just kidding.
So, yes, I guess we're the beginning of the end now, since there are only 3 books left. So we have, but we actually have more story now that in front of us than we did when we started.
I wish everyone could see me. I'm like dancing all happy around while we're talking about this. I'm excited.
Yeah. Everybody was dancing. Yeah. Mm. I don't know what wizarding music really sounds like. So anyway, but getting to the end of this book, it's very interesting, because I would say that the overall mood of this chapter is mostly melancholy, because there's a lot of fallout that's happening here, and specifically, I was. You know, as you start this chapter, Harry is looking back over the month that's happened since the Triwizard Tournament, and he can barely remember it, honestly, because it just seems like a blur, and most of it's too painful. And she tells a little bit about him meeting with the Diggorys, and how difficult that is for him, and of course for his parents, and how beautiful and wonderful they are to him about it. They don't blame him whatsoever. They actually thank him for bringing back their kid's body, and then they won't take the money. And it's just a really gut-wrenching scene when you start to think about like what Harry's got to be going through and what they're going through at the same time. And it's just, it's kind of awful when you read it. And like we said last time, it's kind of beautiful at the same time. And it's hard. I don't know. It is kind of hard to read.
Yeah, I'm glad it's really brief, because we don't really need to live the grief. Like, I feel like we can appreciate it without living it. So I'm grateful she doesn't make us experience it in this moment. We'll have plenty of opportunities going forward. And I did kind of like that Harry feels kind of like this money is just like he doesn't want anything to do with it, and he cannot get rid of it like at all. It just won't go away. So I thought that was kind of a little interesting thing they're sort of carrying over, like Fudge wouldn't keep it, and now the Diggorys don't want it, and like what is he gonna do with it? He doesn't want it. So I do find, I don't know, this last chapter has sort of, you have to imagine Harry sort of going through it not feeling anything, right? He isn't really depicted as super sad. He's not really depicted as super happy. He's just sort of ghosting through the last part of the year. You know, they mentioned they don't have any more Defense Against the Dark Arts, so they get to spend that free time doing other things, and they get to go visit Hagrid. I really like in that scene specifically that Hagrid goes, "Oh, Harry, how are you doing?" And he's like, "Oh, I'm fine." And he's like, "No, you're not, but you will be." And I always appreciated that sort of feedback. Like when someone's like, "Oh, are you okay? How are you doing?" And they're like, "Oh, I'm fine." And it's like, "No, you're not fine. And it's okay to not be fine." Like, I love that she straight up calls that out. That like, it's okay that you're not okay. You can be okay, but in this moment, you don't have to be okay. I thought that was a nice little moment and a nice little reminder to put out there. So yeah, all in all, I agree. It's kind of a melancholy chapter.
I think you called out something that I really appreciated about the chapter, is the fact that Harry, you do get this sense where Harry doesn't necessarily know how to feel, other than it's been a rough time.
Right.
And part of that not knowing how to feel is he's having a hard time remembering it, because it's almost as if, you know, his body is kind of pushing it away. And his mind is pushing it away. But I love the way that she describes the way his friends are taking care of him. You know, before that they go to see Hagrid, there's a moment where they're just hanging out because they don't have as many classes. And, of course, Harry doesn't have any tests because all the finals were canceled for him. So you don't have to worry about that. And she explains the dynamic of how Ron and Hermione and Harry have kind of come to this unspoken place, which is that it's okay to not talk about things because we don't need to talk about things because we've already talked about them. And they just allow Harry to be with them. And I think, you know, one of the things that she really does is, and we've talked about this at length with this book, is the way that she talks about people dealing with really tough things in their life, whether it's depression. And Harry has, I think, some depressive tendencies at this chapter. And part of that is just that he doesn't know how to talk about anything anymore. He doesn't know what to do about it all, but he just needs people to be with him, and it's okay that they're not talking. And his friends allow him that space, that freedom to just be and not feel like he has to do anything. And I think part of that too is Harry's not really going to classes. He's not going to eat with everybody. He's just hanging out with the people that are closest to him, and they're taking care of him by allowing him to be okay with not being anything other than just, you know what, I just need to play chess here with my friends and not talk about anything. And I think it's such a beautiful thing, because it's exactly what people in this position need. You need time and space to allow your brain to kind of slowly process it. And they're there if he wants to talk, but honestly, he just wants to like not have to think about it and play some chess and just hang out, you know? And I really appreciate the way that she shows that. And to me, I think it shows the real importance of the Harry Potter series is that she does not shy away from hard things for kids, but she also gives them a very good template for what should happen when awful things happen. And this is a definite plus, which is to say, no, you don't need to be alone. You need people, but you need people who are going to allow you to just be okay with not talking about it, but that they're there with you. And I think that's beautiful.
Well, and that they this is where it kind of gets into like he needed a sense of normal. And not normal in that like he still goes to classes and goes to eat, but normal in that someone treats him normal. They don't treat him like he's broken. They don't treat him like, oh no, I'm going to upset him. Like they just treat him like Harry and know that Harry will talk to them when he's ready, which we do find. So after this kind of the year end feast, you know, Dumbledore steps up and tells everyone what happened and shares the fact that, you know, Voldemort's back and killed Cedric, and that Cedric was an incredibly brave child who crossed paths with the wrong person, and remember that and all this stuff. And we go further through the chapter and it kind of feeds into that whole process that all of a sudden Harry feels like it's normal to talk about it now. And like he can talk about it, no problem. So the patience and the support that Ron and Hermione provide really allow Harry, okay, now I'm ready to talk about it. Now let's talk about it. And it's comfortable. So, you know, it showed the end result of like he didn't shut down forever. He just needed some time and the right opportunity. And for talking about it to sort of be normalized versus hush hush or rumorized. You know, it's not a rumor. It's not, you know, horrible. Now it's just a thing that's out there for the world to know or for all Hogwarts to know. And he can talk about it pretty freely now. So the whole thing kind of ties together really nicely. And she does a good job of kind of wrapping up that feeling that Harry's going through.
Yeah, I think there's a really nice sense of support that Harry gets. And like you said, Dumbledore not shying away from telling everybody what happened and telling them the truth. And I really love this too, because it is something that, you know, Dumbledore is very secretive, but he tends to keep secrets because he's trying to keep people safe, not because he's trying to lie to people. And this is a moment where he just plain says, this is a moment where I could lie to you, but I feel like the truth is better than lies for the most part. You know, in most situations, the truth is better than a lie. And I really appreciate that we get that in this book. And she ties that in with what he says then about Cedric at the end, which is, you know, remember the time should when the time should come where you have a choice to between what is right and what is easy. Remember a boy who is good and kind and brave. Cedric Diggory, and he puts Cedric on that pedestal, which is, you know, a place that, as we've seen in this story, Cedric wasn't perfect, but he was a good kid who truly embodied what it meant to be a Hufflepuff, which is somebody who's good and kind and brave and caring and willing to give of himself sacrificially if need be, and to help others. Like he's just a good kid who really held on to what is good and true and right and all those things. And so I really appreciate that she makes this distinction between the good characters and the bad characters that especially we've seen with what we saw with Voldemort and his return and how he returned and everything. And I think she clearly puts a, you know, that indelible line in the sand here between the people who are doing right and the people who aren't. And she's even comparing that because we hear some talk about, you know, the ministry and everything like that and how Fudge is sweeping it all under the rug. And again, I think Dumbledore is showing true leadership and what it means, which is to not shy away from the hard things. And he's actually doing exactly what he's preaching here, which is it would be easier to tell the kids nothing other than there was an accident, right? But what he's doing is very difficult because it's actually going, and we will see this in the next book, but what Dumbledore does here is going to have really interesting consequences for him, for Harry, and a lot of people. But he's still doing it, even knowing those things will probably come. And I think that's really cool.
Yeah, that's one of my favorite lines in all of the books, actually, is the one about when you have the choice between what's right and what's easy, because they almost never are the same thing from a cost perspective. When you do the right thing, it's always going to cost you something. It's one of my favorite lines, and I'd forgotten that it happened here, so I was really excited when I read it. So this is definitely the most impactful scene, and I think she does it with good reverence too. She has Dumbledore share what has happened, and it's done with this sense of finality. This is the truth. This is what it is. I'm going to tell you all straight. And it's not done in a sense to instill panic or fear. It's just a very straightforward, I'm telling you like it is moment. And he does sort of honor Harry and his bravery as well. And puts Harry up on that pedestal a little bit, which I think will come back to kind of bite Harry in the butt in the next couple books. But I do appreciate the moment and the honoring of all the sacrifices being made by everyone. And I don't feel like, I don't know, I feel like Harry doesn't think he deserved to be put up on that pedestal. But I think he appreciated the opportunity that it afforded him to bring some semblance of normalcy to what's going on and feel like it's okay to talk about. And I think that that's important for people to hear too. You know, there's things that happen to us in our life that is hard. I mean, Matt and I, before we were recording, we even talked about some of the horrific things we've been reading in the news in the last few months. And, you know, they're hard to talk about and you don't want to talk about them and you're worried what it's going to do and what it's going to incite and who's going to argue with you. But it's still important that you get to a point where it's okay to have those conversations and it's okay to have those disagreements and it's okay to respect others' opinion if it differs. And it's okay to talk about something that is tragic. You have to, otherwise every time it gets more and more sensational. And I think that that's kind of what Dumbledore did here is he took away the sensationality or the sensationalism to what's happening and just presented it as, hey guys, this is what's going on. I want you to know. So I appreciate it. There's so much more that happens in this chapter. It's actually a relatively robust chapter. And we skipped over the fact that Hagrid is going to be taking a special little adventure here starting in the next book over the summer and possibly bleeding into fall. But he won't tell us what it is.
Yeah, I really liked this part, you know, because like you mentioned earlier, you know, they have the whole thing where he asks, how are you? And Harry's like, I'm fine. He's like, no, you're not, but you will be. And, you know, they're trying to get out of him what he's going to be doing. And he won't tell them, but it does seem to involve Madame Maxime. So that's very interesting. I think she has telegraphed exactly what Hagrid's going to be doing if you pay attention.
If you're paying attention, you know exactly what's happening.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, but we won't spoil it just yet. But I think all we'll say is that if you've been reading the book pretty closely about the characters of Hagrid and Madame Maxime and some things that came out and some ideas that Dumbledore had when he was talking to... Anyway, so yes, that's all
that should
I'll
be enough to
that.
Connect the dots, y'all. And if not, I'm not going to spoil it.
Exactly. And then, you know, it's interesting too because Harry's also thinking about all of these people who have been doing things and, you know, he wonders a little bit about Snape. You know, why did Dumbledore believe in him? What is it that he's been doing? Has he, you know, he's been obviously spying against Voldemort, and what does that all mean? And he obviously can't figure it out, but it is very interesting for him to be thinking about that, and it is something that plays hugely into the rest of the series, and so she's not just placing it here because it's something that we are going to pick up on big time. And so, and then after that, this chapter really is kind of about wrapping up these things, but it is a beginning because even at the end when they're about to leave for school, you know, all the different schools are leaving. And I love how Fleur comes over and, you know, she says, you know, thank you to Harry. It was great to meet you. I really enjoyed getting to meet you. And how she's hoping to maybe visit so her English can get better. And it's a really cute scene. Like, you can just imagine Harry kind of being like, okay.
Well, and it's kind of one of those things where you get Fleur not, like, kind of using her whims. Do you know what I mean? She's not using her wiles. You get the impression she's just genuinely thankful and just, you know. This is really Dumbledore speaking at the end of his speech. We kind of skipped over a little bit, but he really painted the picture that, like, this is the most important time for everyone to come together, to look past our differences, you know, Durmstrang or Beauxbatons or Hogwarts, like, everyone is welcome here all the time. You can always seek protection as long as we're all on the same side, you know, and she seems to have really embodied this and wants to become more a part of this, like, international community versus just a Beauxbatons. So, she's really seemed to have taken this to heart with everything that's happened, which is super, it's super cute. It really is. It's a really cute little moment. And I always love when you can see something speak to someone and you can, like, see their, you can just imagine her eyes lighting up and her feeling really energized by that message. I just love when that happens. So it's a beautiful little, like, moment that she paints where she seems to have given Fleur more than just this sort of vapid Vila tribute, will.
Well, and I think you're absolutely right, because you don't get any sense that she's, you know, putting on any of her Vila airs here, you know, that she is very genuine when she's talking to Harry about it being wonderful to have met him and being very thankful for, you know, all these things. And, you know, I mean, you do remember back, she did have her sister saved by Harry, even though she wasn't really in danger, but she didn't know that at the time either. Right. And so, you know, she does have this relationship with Harry, and I do appreciate that. I think Rowling does a great job of giving her just a slight a bit more of depth here that will be interesting to see if then she shows up in the later books. Hint, hint, she probably will. You know,
and she does.
She does. And then, you know, we also get Crumb here coming up and asking to talk to Hermione, which is kind of adorable too. And she's, like, very flustered, and you can tell she's blushing. And they talk, and then I love when they come back, and Crumb also shakes Harry's hand, saying, you know, I like you. I really liked you know, Diggory. He was always polite to me, and I think. You know, you are a good person, basically. And then Ron being like, can I have your autograph?
I do love that moment. Well, and because Ron is all snippy with Crumb.
Yep.
You know, when he's like, oh, yeah, sure, blah, blah, blah. You know, he's like, we're leaving, Hermione, we're leaving. Mm-hmm. You know, and then he's like, can I have your autograph? It's like this weird hatred, but fanboyness at the same time. It's super cute. He can't decide if he wants to fan out or hate Crumb.
Yeah, it's like he has him on his fantasy team and he doesn't really like the guy, but he's got to root for him, right? Because he's on his fantasy team.
Right.
Which, yeah, is very funny. I do, you know, I think that the fun revelation here too at the end, because we've had this whole thing about Rita Skeeter. And we finally learn how she's been getting all her scoops, and it's because Harry Hermione.
And we do figure out the whole thing with the hospital and Hermione making all that noise.
Yep. Mm-hmm. Yep. Mm-hmm. And it's because Hermione had figured out something, because Harry had put an idea in her head about bugging. And it turns out we have another unregistered animagus in Rita Skeeter, who is a beetle. And I love that Hermione has captured her, and that's what she did at the hospital. She had captured her, threw her into a jar, and then put an unbreaking spell in the jar so she can't escape.
I love that Hermione sort of enacts her own form of justice.
Oh, it's
and
awesome.
And it's like, I'm going to capture you, and I'm going to release you when you're far away from Hogwarts, And if you write anything in the next like year or something like that, I will tell everyone that you are an unregistered animagus. And like, she basically blackmails her in her own way instead of doing what you would expect someone like Hermione to do, who's a super by the books rule follower, and just straight up reporting her. She knows that she can do more good by getting Rita Skeeter to back off for a while than by reporting her. Plus, it kind of shows this lack of faith now in the system. Dumbledore doesn't trust the system. Now Hermione doesn't trust the system. More and more, Harry says something to the twins at the very end about, oh, your mom probably doesn't want you to work for the ministry anyway. Just this overall lack of faith in their own government now is so strong in a single chapter in this book from many different facets. So, but I thought it was funny that she has her own, like, Hermione Granger justice.
Who knew that Hermione Granger was going to turn into a vigilante?
Right? So Ron's been rubbing off on her too much.
I guess. She needs a better name than Spew, though.
Yeah, so. She does. Interestingly, though, we get a little bit of an introduction here to something that seems to be happening throughout the series. I think it happened in the last two books now. Harry's been through this relatively traumatic event, and Mrs. Weasley loves him like a son.
Mm-hmm.
And she tells him that he has to go back to the Dursleys. And she can't tell him why, but he's going back to the Dursleys. And even Ron was like, I guess we just have to trust Dumbledore. But it's a strange little thing that doesn't make a lot of sense to us as readers, but will come out to be a pretty significant thing in the future. And this is where she just kind of, again, kind of lays in and is like, hey, you're going back to the Dursleys. And nobody knows why. Well,
yeah,
we don't know why.
That is something that she has been doing this whole book, honestly. Just like laying a couple little things that don't get paid off until later. But yeah, they do mean something.
One that we won't get the payoff for a couple of books, but the payoff will be good.
Well, and I think it's what's nice about it is that it makes sense in the sense that we don't understand it yet, but we've gotten used to trusting Dumbledore throughout the series. And so I really like the way that she kind of lays that in there. I do think it's interesting how we get one last confrontation with Malfoy on the train. And I love that he starts talking smack about, you know, Dumbledore and all those things. And Harry's had enough. And I love that he brings up the very beginning, the very first book, which is, I told you, don't pick the wrong side. Way back in the day, I told you. And I really like Harry's response, which is pretty much like, I've had enough of this. And he and Ron and Hermione all attack them, and then apparently after they all go down, they realize the people in the hallway have also attacked them as well, Fred and George, and they've all hit them with different spells, which is just fantastic. And it creates a very funny, what happens here is you get a very, she switches the mood, it becomes a little bit more lighthearted here at the end, which is really nice. Like it feels like a good payoff to kind of end on a slightly happier note to where we were.
She uses the twins that way. She uses them as the way of lightening the mood. When she introduces them into a scenario, you always know that it's going to be something relatively lighthearted. And I think the actors who portrayed the twins in the films did a great job of bringing that to the table. And I think that that's the mechanism she uses here. She's trying to say, don't take everything so seriously. Let's bring it back a little lighthearted. And even though what they're talking about is pretty like heavy and dark, and that they've lost their entire savings that they worked so hard for because they got taken by Ludo Bagman, who paid them in leprechaun gold and like all of these things. It's still a pretty like depressing topic, honestly. But it's done in such a way that they're like, oh, it's we'll figure it out. Like, well, you know, like everything's going to be okay. They have a relatively positive attitude towards everything that's happening. And I love, love, love that this is where Harry gets to offload his like tainted gold. He's like, take it,
Just take it.
But don't tell your mom where you got it from.
To me, that was such a satisfying thing. Because obviously, you know, the last two chapters, there's been so much made of this gold and the struggle and almost the albatross that it's been around Harry's neck. Like, he can't get rid of it, and it keeps reminding him of these awful things. And here he gets the opportunity to take that gold and give it to people that he really cares about and really believes in, which is Fred and George, take this gold. Go do. I feel like the world could use some laughs. Go start your company. This is what you're like. I kind of love that because it's basically Harry saying, go do what you guys are good at. You guys are great at this. You know, like the way that he supports them is actually so sweet. Like, and he truly believes that what they're giving the world needs now is jokes, sweet jokes, you know, and everybody just is going to need a laugh. And I really appreciate the way that she kind of brings that in and they take that gold and they're so thankful to Harry. And I love that the one stipulation is that, well, there are two. Don't tell your mom. The other one was buy Ron some new dress robes and don't tell him they came from me. Tell them they came from you.
Yeah. I like that too. That was really nice. A nice little moment. And I like that there's just a few little, I do like that at this point, Crabbe and Goyle and Malfoy are just unabashingly evil. Mm-hmm. They've just owned it. They admit it. Like, there's no more hiding it or playing it off. Like, they are straight up on that side. So I think that's really interesting. And to me, that's different than kind of how you get it in the movie. You sort of still have this air of suspicion versus confirmed feelings. But yeah, they're just straight up bad people. And they are not ashamed about it at all.
And I really, I appreciate the way this ends to, you know, they get off the train and Harry's going to go stay with the Dursleys. And you know, Miss Weasley's saying, you know, I think, you know, Dumbledore will let you come stay with us later in the summer. And so we'll keep in touch. And then, you know, there's this nice moment, you know, Harry gives him a good old clap on the back as a good friend would do. And then Hermione gives him a kiss on the cheek, which is just so adorable because it really kind of signals in many ways, you know, they're growing up, you know, like Harry this summer will turn 15, you know, and there has been a change. And I really appreciate that moment because there is something about that that is, and I never took it as, and there's the whole thing about the people who are Ron and the Harry and
the ones
Hermione
that are
shippers.
Harry Hermione shippers.
But to me, it really does kind of seem that this moment is so much more the kind of thing that your sister might do, who'd be worried about her, you know, older brother. Than anything else. And I think it's just a really sweet moment. Like, you see Harry being taken care of here again at the end, and you see a real bond that's happened between these three. Like, you know, from, and we saw that earlier in the chapter where there was a understanding between them without them really having to talk about it, because they just knew what each other needed. They knew what Harry needed. And so I almost feel like this is another one of those moments. Like, in, I don't know, it's just, it's a great way to end the book, because mm-hmm. there is a nice bit of hope here. And it'll be interesting when we pick up, you know, the Order of the Phoenix. And yeah, it's a little bit different.
And I always took that as just Hermione starting to come into her own, like, as who she is and what her role in this, like, ragtag gang of misfits is. You know, she's building that confidence, and she's kind of growing into who she wants. And this year, I think, was really big for that, between the relationship with Victor and just everything. We've seen a shift in her, and I think this is just one more way that they are kind of showing that she's, like, blossoming into herself. And to me, I agree, it wasn't like a romantic thing. It was just like, this is the I'm Hermione. I'm someone who kisses people on the cheek now. Like, that's who I am. Like, take it or leave it. You know, like, it was just done in this, like, confident that's what she wants to do kind of thing. So, yeah, I like that moment too. And I like that, you know, like that's just how it is. And it does end with Harry just, you know, heading off with the Dursleys. And he's like, I know this is going to suck, but can't suck any more than the last couple of weeks. So we're okay.
You know, I think there's another thing that goes along with that as well, is that I feel like we live in a world that's so over-sexualized that we miss those things where people should be able to give people a hug or a kiss on the cheek and it not be romantic and it not be something that means anything other than I love you. And that doesn't have to be sexual, you know? There are other types of love, and we have just lost that ability, I think, in our culture to be able to show love to other people in ways that should be okay, and yet our culture's just kind of made it impossible to do because everything gets taken the wrong way. And that's really actually kind of sad to me, because this moment here is a really, I think, important, sweet moment for these characters and what they mean to each other. And to lose that just in our society it's kind of sad.
Yeah, it is a nice moment. But I do like that the chapter ends on hope. I do like that we don't have a sort of downtrodden ending. Harry walks away kind of confident and that things are going to happen, and that, you know, I feel like this is kind of the first year where he knows that he's not going to be missing letters from his friends. He knows, like, what's going on. He's going to talk to them. He has total and utter faith that everything's going to be okay, mm-hmm. because he's got his little, you know, band of wizards. So it is a nice little ending.
His posse of people.
His posse of magic, of magicians. But yeah, it is a nice little ending, and it wraps up without anything too badly happening. And we just sort of get to start the next book off probably midsummer, and we'll go from there.
Yeah. It's been so much fun rereading this one too. And I do have to say, I really appreciate the intricacy of the story here and the way that she just upped her game. Obviously, you know, you went from the third book to the fourth book, and the page count is astronomically bigger. And I think in many ways, she just challenged herself story-wise, and the story becomes more challenging as we move forward, and I really like that. And what I think is really neat is that you can also see how the story starts off with an 11-year-old, but we are just ended the year of the 14-year-olds, and the next book is the 15-year-olds, and so we really get that sense that the story is growing with the audience and growing as the kids grow. And I appreciate how she does that, because you do start in a much more kid-friendly place, and we've just ended in a place where these kids are slowly turning into little adults now.
They're not kids anymore.
Yeah. No, they're being forced to really grow up. And so the next book, we are going to deal with some very interesting and tough things. And so I can't wait to dive into that. But Dre, if anybody wants to like catch up with you and maybe share their favorite Harry Potter gifts from, you know, the Goblet of Fire, where can they catch up with you?
Sure. You can find me on Twitter at PCFChick or on Instagram at Drea Kaufman, and it's COFFMAN.
And you can find me over on Twitter at MattRedding02, and then I'm also on Instagram under the same name. Here on the network, you can also find me doing Aggressive Negotiations with John Mills as we talk about a Star Wars topic each and every week. It is a Star Wars podcast, so if you love Star Wars, I hope that you will check it out. I think you will really enjoy the show. We have a blast every week doing that, just talking about something Star Warsy. You can find me over on the Trek FM network doing a couple of shows. I do The Orb there with Chris Jones talking about Star Trek Deep Space Nine. And then I also do the General Geek Show, which the 602 Club, and it allows us to talk about as many different fandoms as we can. We do talk about Harry Potter over there, Fantastic Beasts. We've talked about Star Wars, Bond, I mean, Marvel, DC, so many different fandoms, so I hope you'll check that out. And then last but not least, doing a show called Cinema Stories with my friend Courtney, and that's where we talk about films, but through the lens of faith. But we want to thank you so much for checking your outpost.
Mischief Managed.
Thank you.
Join the revolution. Join the Nerd Party.